Hello, and welcome to the Mail Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Chris Marshall of the Clickit Comics Library.
In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. The numbers we're going to be talking about in this episode are the top 300 trade sales for October 2010 through Diamond to retailers. And these are things actually invoiced to the retailers. Obviously, quite a few of these are still going to be sitting on store shelves, so we can buy them. That's a good thing. If my voice sounds a little bad, that's because I got sick the other morning. I had for dinner the other night something that was labeled gluten-free chicken noodle soup.
Oh, John, please.
It tasted great on the way down, not quite as good on the way back up.
Oh, enough. All right, let's move on.
Yes. Hopefully that'll be the only nauseating thing we have this episode.
That's one hell of a way to start. Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Eating is like Russian roulette for me sometimes, I swear.
That's true.
It sucks. Anyway, so looking at the top trade sales, we're going to look at the breakdown of the top 300. Looking at the aggregate sales for the various publishers like we usually do. Pretty much neck and neck this time around between Marvel and DC. DC squeaked out on top by units with 22.39%. Marvel right behind with 22.25%. So really a 0.14% difference in units between Marvel and DC. That works out to just a couple of hundred, roughly 500 or so units, so not that much of a difference. Now, by dollars, it's a bit of a different story. DC had 26.51%. Marvel had 24.98%, so over a 2.5-point difference there. And that goes towards the average price at DC being about $1.50 more than over at Marvel. Now, DC only had 52 items on the list. Marvel had 87. What we see this time around near the bottom of the trades list is just a ton of reorder activity for Marvel books. It may be another case where they've had blowouts and just, you know, were given great deals to the retailers, you know, penny on the dollar type stuff, not literally, but close to. Because periodically what happens is Diamond will look around their warehouse and say, oh my gosh, we've got this pallet of books we'd lost track of at one point. They're, you know, sitting in inventory, they're costing us tax money, whatever, whatever. Let's blow them out the door, so instead of, you know, the $10 it would cost for the trade for the retailer or whatever the price would be, it's like two or something.
But that's still only a cost to the retailer. The consumer doesn't see that break in cost, though.
That really depends on the retailer, but by and large, no, they don't.
Okay.
And this is actually not a bad thing, because this allows retailers to kind of bulk up their inventory, and in some cases they need to, in some cases they don't. Some cases this is stuff they can sell easily, some cases it's not. But it allows them to get cheap merchandise. And the reason this is a good thing, almost regardless of the merchandise, is anytime you go to a convention, like when I went to the Austin one here, or when we go to San Diego, or you go to the ones there in Chicago and stuff,
right,
in the Detroit area, you know, the various regional ones, we've all seen these booths that are saying, okay, any trade, $5.
Yeah, and it's mostly Marvel, you're right, yeah.
Well, if they can get it for cheaper than $5, they make money.
Right.
Now, you know, obviously some of these are just, hey, I overordered whatever, but in a lot of cases, maybe it's not. So, I think we're seeing a lot more items. Again, 42 reorder items this month for Marvel, which is fairly unusual. And I think that crowded out quite a few DC items, because we usually see a very strong backorder presence for DC.
Mm-hmm.
Image had a fairly good month with a total of 35 items that accounted for 17.95% of the units and 14.23% of the dollars for the top 300. Now, the other two premier publishers, Dark Horse and IDW, Dark Horse had 20 items accounting for 10.83% of the units and 9.91% of the dollars. IDW had 17 items accounting for only 4.03% of the units and 5.05% of the dollars. So not a strong month for IDW, pretty good month for everybody else, but that accounts for 211 of the items and 77.45% of the units,
mm-hmm,
and 80.69% of the dollars. So very strong month for the premier publishers, kind of squeezing out a lot of, you know, the space for the other guys.
Right.
But we still have, you know, another 29 or so publishers represented on the top 300 list, which is pretty good. And that probably ought to be 30, because I think at least one item got mistagged for Random House that was really a Radical Comics trade paperback.
Oh, really? Which one was that?
Last Days of American Crime.
Okay.
One of the issues with my current number crunching system, because I haven't cut over to my new one yet because it's not quite done. It's a problem with a day job and, you know, a life. And reading comics. It takes a lot of time. Anyways, the current system I've got takes the three-letter code that comes with the list every month from Diamond, and if it's RAN, and RAN is Random House, doesn't matter who the publisher is, that's what my system's going to say it's for.
Right.
The way I'm correcting that on my new system is keying it back to how it was solicited, because in the solicitation text, in the consumer order form text files and stuff I've got, it actually has the publisher name. So that will help correct these problems going forward if I can ever kind of, you know, get over that hurdle and cut over to that new system.
Would they ever go to a four-letter system?
The number of letters does not matter.
It doesn't matter.
It's the use of them.
Okay.
Because we've had ARC, could be Archie, Arcana, Archaea.
Right, right.
And sometimes all in the same month.
Yeah.
There are times where IDW is listed as IDW on the comics list and IDE on the trades or vice versa. You know, Moonstone goes between MOO, MNS. I mean, it's a lack of consistency.
Yeah, they need to straighten that out, because that's been going on for years.
Oh, yeah. But that's also part of the problem. When you've got some of these that have been going on for years, and a publisher goes out of business and comes back, gee, is it okay to use CLA again? Because Claypool's long since gone, or maybe that's not a good move. You know, it's a dicey thing.
It's almost like they should attribute a number to it as well, or something like that. You know, I don't know.
Definitely they should do a number as a database guy. That's right. How I would do it in a database system. The difference is I wouldn't be trying to show the number and have it be readable to users.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the problem, is they're just giving a three-character code. Space is cheap for the most part.
Right.
You know, but really it's not. Disk space is cheap. Web space, real estate across the board, you know, that gets a little hard to fit some of this in.
Mm-hmm.
As you can tell by the small type I've had to use on this Excel sheet.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And I've got a wide monitor. Not as wide as I'd like, but anyways. So, jumping over into the list, we've got a really great-selling number one item this time around, a not too bad number two item. Then we get to things starting to drop off a bit. But that first item should be no surprise. It's Walking Dead, Volume 13, Too Far Gone, trade paperback. 19,324 units. Now, that's not as high as the total known sales for the previous volume, which have gone up to a total of 28,540. But really, the only times we're seeing stuff up in this nearly 20,000 range is when we see something that is really original to this format.
Mm-hmm.
So for a collected edition to be showing up at the top of the list with this kind of really robust sales, fantastic. Now, this shipped 3 weeks late. It's collected material. It shouldn't ship late, but hey, you know, these things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, Walking Dead is riding high based on the TV show. It seems to be getting, you know, really good ratings, really good critical acclaim, so no big surprise. If we were to filter the list down to image, what we would find is total sales of 43,061 units for Walking Dead across the trade paperbacks, the hardcovers, and the compendium. Now, out of that, 39,439 are from the trade paperbacks, which have, I believe, every volume of them. The hardcovers account for 2,596 units, which had every volume except volume 4, which I found kind of odd why that one wouldn't be in there. And only one of the compendiums, I believe it was the first. Let me filter this list down just so I'm not misleading people on that. The first compendium with 972 units. So, again, 43,061 units for Walking Dead. Everything else in Image, 20,552 units. So, two-thirds of what, you know, Image pulled in on the trade side was Walking Dead. again, no surprise. It's always been a strong seller. It's always been a bit of a perennial. Add to that the TV show. You know, this was, again, no surprise whatsoever. And, you know, kudos to Kirkman for, you know, creating something that's got this kind of longevity. This is something that is really, really rare in comics these days.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think to a certain degree, creatively, it's petered out a little bit, but the sales are still there. So, you know, this is at least the retailer community, if not the actual reading community, saying, hey, John, I don't agree with you. It is doing great. So
mm-hmm.
I'm okay with that. Okay, second item on the list is a hardcover. It's Serenity Shepherd's Tale. It went for $14.99, as did The Walking Dead, so we're seeing some lower-priced items up at the top here. It did 14,299 units. Now, again, like I was talking before, typically when we see these kinds of robust sales, it's original material to this format. That's exactly what this is. Now, before we started recording, you were saying you were going through the TV show and then you were going to watch the movie and stuff?
Yeah, I'm about just a few episodes in, and I am enjoying it. And it's one of those things where, you know, I meant to buy the DVD when it came out on DVD the first time around, and then the movie came out, and I still never got around to it. And then finally I saw them both on sale at Best Buy, and I picked them up for, you know, half off or whatever. And, no, I'm enjoying it. It's one of those things where, boy, I wish I was watching this as it was coming out. But I know the order it was released on TV was all crazy. It's a little easier watching it back to back to back the way it was meant to be seen. And you know, and now I'm enjoying it. And you were saying after the movie, get the comic books and kind of get up to speed, because it does fit in.
The stuff fits in certainly with Shepherd's Tale. Do not read that until after you've watched the TV show and the movie.
Yeah.
Because it would spoil a couple of things, which would be bad.
Mm-hmm.
I watched the Firefly when it was coming out on TV. When it came out on DVD, picked up the box set, watched it in that order. Really loved it, enjoyed the movie and stuff. And I've really enjoyed most of the comics they've done. This was, I think, a good story, but the narrative technique they used did not work for me.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, again, I enjoyed seeing Shepherd's Tale and stuff and finding out what his backstory was. It was pretty cool.
Do you think that, I mean, Dark Horse has got a lot of properties, and you think something like this, if it was done right, could be a Buffy the Vampire Season 8 or a Star Trek or something, you know, an ongoing series instead of these offshoot, you know, graphic novel miniseries that we were getting periodically?
Certainly.
Yeah.
If you had, one, you'd have to have Joss Whedon involved, no question about that.
Really? Okay.
At least creatively, not necessarily writing everything.
Well, kind of like a Lucas, how he oversees
everything.
Well,
like he's done with Buffy Season 8.
Or, yeah, with Buffy too, right.
And again, Dark Horse would be the perfect place to do that, if that's what they wanted to do. Now, I would think that they might be better off doing, you know, 3 to 5 episode miniseries as if those are standalone episodes.
Right.
And build up that way. I think part of the problem Season 8 for Buffy has had is it's gone like 40-some-odd issues. I think just read number 39 or something. And it's good, but that's about a 4-year-long, quote-unquote, season.
Right.
And, you know, when you factor in the length of how much story content per comic versus a TV episode, it kind of sort of works out, actually. But just the elapsed time is a bit much.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, perhaps if they were to do, again, like they did with Shepherd's Tale, take something that's, I forget, is that like 98 pages, 96 pages or somewhere around
something
there?
Something like that, yeah.
You know, and go in installments like that. Now, I would not necessarily do them as hardcovers, but, right. You know, c'est la vie.
This is 56 pages you have.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty thin.
Yeah.
This is something that, you know, square binding, I think, was a bit much, much less putting it in a hardcover, you know, so... If they were to be a bit more price conscious on that, come out with those every other month or something like that, I think they could do pretty well. Particularly if they mobilize the Browncoats, you know, the Firefly community,
mm-hmm.
And you know, keep it quote unquote authentic and real to the show, and you know, give it that sense that it matters. Though definitely, I think they could do a lot more with that property if they wanted to.
Okay, it was a good showing, I thought. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, again, over 14,000. It's mm-hmm. not often we can use that 1,000 word, much less with, you know, double digits in front of it.
Well, it's not often that Image and Dark Horse get slots 1 and 2 above DC and Marvel, you know. I mean, Usually it's a Walking Dead or something like that, but to have them both up there, that's kind of nice to see for a change.
Yeah. Well, and what's also interesting is once we get to this third item, items, you know, ranks two and three are right. original to trade or exactly. hardcover in this case
right.
stuff. Because at rank number three here, we've got Superman Earth One hardcover. It's reorder activity, but 8,014 units of reorder activity. Now, that cranks the total known sales for that thing up to 24,274 units. So it's going to be really interesting at the end of the year when the book scan numbers get leaked, if they do, because Brian Hibbs usually gets that out, to see how this, how both of these do. Well, all three of them. I'd like to see how Walking Dead's doing in the mass market with the TV show out, Serenity, Shepherd's Tale with the Firefly and all that stuff. There may be people who stumble across that in a bookstore and say, oh, that, I remember the show, I like the show, I'll grab this. And Superman, everybody knows Superman. He's like one of the five most recognizable fictional characters on the planet. I believe it was Superman, Sherlock Holmes, Mickey Mouse, Tarzan, and I forget who the fifth was.
Tarzan's still up there?
This is from a couple of years back, from so my information is dated. I could be wrong, I could be completely misinformed. Well, let's put it this way. You put a man who looks like he lives in the jungle and swinging on a vine.
With a loincloth, right, yeah.
Who else are you going to guess?
Right.
So, but, I mean, the Superman Earth One could do very well in the mainstream mass market. So it's obviously doing very well here. Hell, the 24,000 would be solid sales, unfortunately, over on the comic book side.
Right.
I mean, that would have ranked... this time around, at about rank 63. So it would have outsold X-Factor, Teen Titans, Legion of Superheroes, Avengers Academy, quite a few titles. So nothing to sneeze at there. Sure, it took 2 months to get it, but I think that was a matter of the retailers being a bit conservative in their orders.
Well,
and I do not blame them for that whatsoever.
And just looking at, I hate to pimp a store, but DCBS recently, or Inside Trades recently redid their website, and now you can see like the top 10. And, you know, ever since it's come out, Superman Earth One has been on the top 10 of their orders. So, and now we're into December, and I got a feeling, John, you know, it's probably going to do at least 5,000 for December.
I hope it does. Yeah. I hope it stays doing well. I hope it becomes a quick perennial. I mean, I have issues with Straczynski's, you know, conceptualization of Superman at a very fundamental level, but it was a very entertaining story. It was a solid story. I just didn't care for, you know, a few of the directions he went in. The art was great. I mean, this is something that had that movie on paper kind of a feel in all of the right ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it had just enough, you know, evocativeness of a Superman movie, yet it was very clearly... meant to be a comic. I was very pleased with that, and I would like to see it be very successful. And if this is the kind of format that they can do well both in the direct market and the mass market, I'd like to see them move more in this direction. You know, it gives them a lot more room to maneuver in this kind of a page count than doing it in 20 or 22 page installments every month. So certainly it'll be interesting to see both how this does going forward. And if they ever get the Batman Earth 1 or the Wonder Woman Earth 1 or any of these others out there and how those do.
Yeah, let's hope they get them out there for sure.
Yeah. Okay, rank number 4, we've got The Boys Volume 7, The Innocents Trade Paperback. It did 6,130 units, and that is actually about twice, really, what the Volume 6 has done as far as my list shows. I've got 2,974 units for that previous volume. This is up by 3,156, so that's over double the sales. So I don't know if something just didn't get counted right in my list or if that's actually accurate. That seems really high, actually.
Right. Huh.
But Du Bois has had a longevity and staying power that's been pretty phenomenal. You know, add to that, it's got the miniseries that spun out of it right now with... Huey and stuff. They had the Herogasm before that and stuff. So it's a strong property for Dynamite. And it just shows that, you know, DC, I don't want to say threw it away. I mean, DC did the really clearly the right thing for the industry to allow Dynamite to take that over versus just saying, no, we're done after six issues, that's it. Because they could have really just squashed that like a bug if they wanted to. Okay, rank number five, we've got the Batman and Robin Deluxe Hardcover, Volume 2, Batman vs. Robin. It did 5,556 units. That's down substantially from the total loan sales of the previous volume, which has done 9,835 units. But again, comparing opening sales for a new thing to the total loan sales is a bit unfair because the other issue, other volume has had, you know, 6 months or a year or whatever to accumulate those sales. But it just shows kind of what the potential margin is. This could do another easily 4,000 units over the next 6 months, potentially.
Mm-hmm. I think this is a pretty good series, too.
I've been enjoying it. They've done a really good job.
The bad titles, and I know Morrison is kind of revamping them all right now with Incorporated and everything, but I really like this one.
I like this one. I like Batgirl. A couple of the others I'm just kind of lukewarm on.
Yeah.
Yeah, I certainly think this is one of the highlights. And part of it is Damian is a fun Robin and really...
Exactly.
...gives a dynamic mix to the stuff. So,
yeah, I would not be surprised if he gets his own title. You know, they get a Robin title back, you know, and he gets it.
It'd be interesting. I don't know that I would do that. I would keep him in a team setting.
You think so?
They've put him over in Titans at least for a story arc.
Yeah.
And I think he works well when he's a foil against other characters.
Mm-hmm.
It's that clashing of personalities that makes him so fun. And doing him in a solo book, that would be a little more difficult to do. Rank number six, we've got Chew Volume 3 trade paperback, 5,543 units. Again, that's about a little over half what the previous volume has done over time. Still have not read that, still do not plan to read that. Again, I'm squeamish, what can I say?
Right.
We've got at rank seven, Ex Machina Volume 10 trade paperback that did 4,841 units, and that's only about 18%, 19% off from the previous volume. So really, we're only talking about 1,100 units or so difference between those. Again, factor in a little time for it to build up the sales, and it could easily do that.
Yep. And that's it. That series is done.
Yeah. Did you read that one?
I had the first deluxe hardcover, but that's it. That's all I read.
Anyone who's into superheroes and politics, this is a really interesting mix of the two.
Oh, it was. Yeah, for sure.
Very unique one, too. I think it kind of... I didn't care for the end all that much, personally.
Yeah.
But, you know. Okay, rank number eight, we've got Siege trade paperback at 4,420 units. Now, this was, again, the kind of mini event. It was more just an Avengers event. It didn't really cover everybody. 4,420 units, though, for that kind of a thing, particularly given the huge buildup of 7 years in the making and all this other stuff, a little bit of a letdown, but I kind of felt that way about the series, to be honest. We'll see how that does over time. There were a couple of other Siege side stories at the time. We've got the Thor Siege Aftermath down at rank 27 with 2,054 units and a few things like that. Basically, nothing to get too excited about sales-wise.
Mm.
Unsurprisingly, at rank 9, given the huge popularity of Walking Dead, we've got the first volume here. This has been on the list 68 times before. It has done another 4,324 units of reorder activity, putting the total reported estimated sales through just the direct market at 134,666 estimated units. So it's been doing pretty damn well for Kirkman. And then rounding out the top 10, we've got Green Lantern Agent Orange trade paperback. It did 4,018 units.
I bought that book.
I got it in the issues.
I got the issues, and my son was a big fan of Lair Flees, so he wanted me to get him that trade paperback, so he'll get it for Christmas.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to let him listen to this then before Christmas, are you?
No, he doesn't listen to
this. I know. Please, Dad, can I listen to the boring podcast about the numbers? No. He's what, 7 or 8?
No, he's 10 now.
Oh, he's 10 now. Wow, he's gotten old. At that age, they just don't appreciate the economics of stuff.
No. He understands money, but...
as in the why do comics cost so much?
Yeah, exactly. But you know, it's about this book though, John. Surprisingly, I bought it. I thought it was just going to be your basic trade paperback, you know, with the covers. It has some really nice sketches in the back, about 4, 5, 6 pages of extra bonus material, which was really fun to see. So John's, I mean, again, think about this though. This stuff all takes place before Blackest Night, you know, and now we're finally getting this trade paperback. I mean, this has been a long time since the original issues came out.
Now, did this come out in hardcover?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
That seems odd. I just assumed that it had. No. I have a hard time keeping track of which comes out in trade first, which comes out in hardcover first, and the time lag between them, because again, I'm getting all my stuff in the individual issues.
If I remember correctly, this has not been collected. This is the first time this Agent Orange storyline where they introduce him is collected.
Huh. Interesting.
I could be wrong, but I don't think I am.
I would have figured then, based on that, and how well the Green Lantern stuff's been doing in trade and whatnot, that it would have done a little bit better than this. Not much, but a little. So, now, at ranks 12 and 32, we've got Superman versus Muhammad Ali. We've got the deluxe hardcover at rank 12. We've got the facsimile edition hardcover down at rank 32. At rank 12, the deluxe hardcover did 3,983 units, and that facsimile hardcover did 1,912 units.
Which one did you get?
I got, I believe, the deluxe hardcover.
That's what I got.
And you total those together, you get 5,895 units. Because that originally came out 78?
Oh, earlier than that. Was it 70? Maybe earlier. No, that's about right.
A couple of years before I really started getting hardcore into the comics.
So this would have been, if you added those two together, it would have been number 5 on the list.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And again, you know, it makes sense for them to kind of have split this out because of the different price points and stuff like that, but there comes a point, it's just do a version.
Right.
You know, keep it simple, guys.
Well, the deluxe version was 96 pages for $20, and the facsimile was 80 pages, the original, with a larger size, that tabloid size, for $40. And, you know, I don't mind it being a few inches smaller than the original size, so I can put it on my shelf and get the extra bonus material.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way I looked at it.
I just don't have that much shelf space, one, to begin with, and two, for the more tabloid-sized stuff.
Right.
You know, and the odd-sized things just annoy me, because it's harder for me to keep track of where to, one, to find a spot to put them and keep track of that.
Well, even paying $40 for 80 pages, no thank you.
There is that, too. It did seem a little expensive.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's bigger, but still, you know.
Bigger's not always better.
No, and why couldn't they have added the same bonus material or just put it out in tabloid size? That would have been all right with me. If I mean, Wednesday Comics is big. You know, DC does other bigger books. There was no reason, like you said, that they had to add two editions.
Well, again, particularly one where you had to choose between the extra features or the bigger size.
Right.
You know, the deluxe should have been the better in both respects format. So it'll be interesting to see what they'll do if they put this into a trade down the line. Now, another odd size item is Mouse Guard, Legend of the Guard, at rank 15. We've got the hardcover here. 3,215 units. That's pretty good. I enjoyed that series. And that's one that really the hardcovers they do are pretty nice. And it seems to really kind of fit that format well. Again, the aspect ratio, though, non-standard, just, you know, what can I say? That sort of thing drives me nuts.
Yeah, it's that letterbox size, right?
Thereabouts, yeah.
Yeah.
A little shorter, a bit wider and stuff. It's just, yeah, it doesn't fit with the rest of my comics.
Nope.
I'm very, you know, simple-minded that way. Now, another one I got, and I'm curious to see what you think about this one, is rank 24. Now, I don't get a whole lot of these hardcovers and stuff, because, again, I got most of this in the individual issues. This I've got in the individual issues, but it's one of the few I double-dipped on, and that's the Legion of Superheroes Great Darkness Saga Deluxe Hardcover, 2,194 units. Now, I'm pretty sure this is the first time it's been in hardcover.
I believe so, yeah.
But this has the distinction of being one of the earliest trade paperbacks
right
for DC. because I believe it was this, the Judas contract from the Teen Titans stuff, New Teen Titans, and maybe I'm thinking Camelot 3000 or so. There are only a handful way back in the day that were such pivotal storylines that they felt they had to collect them, you know, back when nothing was getting collected. And I mean, nothing.
Wasn't Teen Titans X-Men another one?
I'm not sure.
Maybe, yeah, I don't know.
I do not recall.
Camelot 3000, you're right on that. I remember that.
But, you know, I certainly remember the Judas contract and stuff, and I might even have those actual trades and stuff from back in the day. But back, I mean, we're talking early 80s, 84-ish here. I mean, this was a really big deal for them to collect something and put it out in a trade, whereas you look at this list, now everything that comes out gets collected. It was just a fundamentally different time in comics. And frankly, I think it was a little better back then when they were a little choosier about what they collected.
Yeah. Yeah, it says on Wikipedia, first printed in 1989.
Okay, so a little later than I was thinking, but still.
Yeah.
Now, to talk a little about how everything is getting collected in a couple of formats that maybe doesn't quite make sense, I highlighted a couple of issues, or a couple of titles and stuff on my list here that really kind of stand out to me on both the Marvel and the DC side as to a statement on kind of the level of sales. At rank 34, we've got Gotham City Sirens, Song of the Sirens hardcover. This is a hardcover of Gotham City Sirens. Perfectly fine series. They've done some good stuff. I don't know that going to hardcover makes sense for that title. 1,832 units. Not bad, not great. Go down to rank 42. We've got Fantastic Four by Jonathan Hickman, Volume 2. I've gone on record many times saying this is just extraordinarily excellent stuff. Top-notch. Again, trade paperback, it's $15.99, some a little cheaper, but, you know, not the cheapest of trades, but not over-expensive, 1,670 units. So you compare that with how that title is doing over on the monthly comics side, where it's doing around 37,740 units this month, and it's like, okay, that's not too bad, but it's not making up for it in trades, so it's one of those things that there are a lot of monthly titles that are I think, either really good or whatever, that just the numbers aren't there on the trade side. You look at the Superman Last Stand of New Krypton Volume 1 hardcover, 1,640 units. And then you jump a bit further to rank 81. We've got Green Arrow Black Canary 5 Stages trade paperback, 1,203 units. Outsiders Road to Hell trade paperback down at rank 119, 9,055 units. These are where we're starting to get a lot of things that just, hey, we published it, we better kick it out to a trade.
Mm-hmm.
When it's getting under 1,000 units, does that really make sense?
Right.
At least from a retailer perspective. From a publisher perspective, hell, they've got it, they may as well kick it out. I mean, I kind of see that.
Right.
Now, another thing I found really surprising was down at rank 163. We've got some reorder activity on that Rocketeer Complete Collection Deluxe Edition hardcover. 703 units, putting its total up to 2,159 units. So I did not expect to see that, and that was one of the higher priced items on the list this time around, $75.
Well, that's one of those books where, you know, they first said, no, we're not gonna reprint it, but then it does get reprinted, and, you know, it sells out, but then they reissue another one. So it's good to see it in circulation still, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at it right now on Amazon. I mean, I remember when it came out, the first printing, John, it was, I mean, I sold my copy for $100 on eBay, right? Now you can pick it up for $50 on Amazon.
Yeah.
You know? So what if it's a second printing, you know?
Yeah, I mean, if you're getting it to read, I mean, 9 times out of 10, what printing it is doesn't really matter.
Not really, no.
Unless you're getting it specifically for the collectability aspect.
Unless you pick it up on first printing and there happens to be an error in it, and if it's an error is of any significance.
Or there's something else to make it unique.
Right.
And that goes to the next item I had highlighted at rank 167, which is the Squadron Supreme by Mark Gruenwald omnibus hardcover.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was a $74.99 hardcover omnibus, you know, big Uber thing from Marvel, 683 units. Pop quiz, what makes the original trade paperback of the Squadron Supreme by Mark Gruenwald unique?
Well, his blood was used in the ink.
Yeah, his ashes were mixed into the ink.
I'm thinking of Kiss. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Now, for younger listeners, Mark Gruenwald was editor-in-chief back in the day at Marvel. He was a longtime writer on Captain America. He felt one of his best series was the 12-issue Squadron Supreme limited series. I would have to agree. It was outstanding. Mark Gruenwald was one of the movers and shakers behind the official handbook of the Marvel Universe. I mean, he died way too young, I believe, of a heart attack. And I think Marvel would be fundamentally different and better had he not died back then. I think he was just a really strong editorial influence and just a really great guy. I met him a couple of times in San Diego and stuff, was really, you know, pleased with my interaction with him. So a little creepy having his ashes mixed in, but, you know, that's somebody who really puts his heart and soul into a comic. That was kind of, again, a little odd, but hey, you know, I respect that. And I'm glad to see they did a omnibus of it, and that it did, again, 683 units. Not lighting the world on fire, but these days, $75 book.
Yeah.
That's a hard sell these days. We're not seeing many things at that level.
That's one worth picking up, though.
Oh, I mean, totally.
I always tell people, never pay full price for a book. You know, get it on the cheap wherever you can. But if you're going to pick one of those omnibuses up, this is one to have in your collection. Even if you have to get it as a trade paperback. Can you even find that trade paperback?
The original series. I mean, you should be able to find this stuff.
Okay, but can you find the Ashes one? Or is that really, really rare?
I can find it because it's sitting on my bookshelf over there.
Okay.
But can you find it out in the stores? I really do not know.
Yeah.
Basic premise for this, for people who are unaware, Squadron Supreme was essentially Marvel's version of the Justice League. You had Hyperion, you had Nighthawk, you had, you've got a Green Lantern equivalent of Dr. Spectrum, you've got Nuke, who's essentially kind of sort of Firestorm, but not quite, you know, all those different analogs. And they're on an alternate Earth, and on this Earth, they decide they're going to actually make Earth a utopia. So they kind of sort of take over the planet and do that. And not everybody's so happy with that. And it was, for that period, about as close to some of the early authority sort of stuff as really could be done back then.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I don't think people were ready at that time for some of the books we have now. You know, I think if you tried to do The Boys or really even some of the earlier authority stuff, you know, 20 years ago, by and large, it wouldn't have worked too well. Brat Pack being the notable exception to that rule. Now, the other one I found really interesting in terms of everything's getting collected and some stuff just simply does not need to be. Rank 234, we've got Darkstar and the Winter Guard trade paperback, 495 units. That was a low, low-selling monthly book, and one that, again, they had it, they may as well kick it out and trade, but clearly nobody was really interested in that.
Oh my God.
You know, so there are a couple, it's like, why bother?
Right.
Now, flip side, you go down to rank 285, we've got the first volume of The Boys, trade paperback, reorder. It's been on the list 32 times before. It only did 423 units this time, but you do that enough times, and you wind up with the total sales of 32,439 units over time. And it's really interesting, because I've got kind of, here's the sales for this month, and I've got the next column of total reported estimated sales. In other words, the total of these estimated sales for all the months that it's shown up on the list. And the values in that column just shoot all over the board. Some of them are exactly what the estimated sales are because they're new or they just haven't shown up on the list before. Others are, you know, 53,501 for the Joker hardcover. Or where's another one? And that's pretty low on the list this time, too, at rank 276. You know, so they just jump all over the board sometimes. It just comes down to how many times has something been on the list before. What else looks interesting to you this time around?
You know, it's kind of interesting, and just the way it kind of compares to Scott Pilgrim, and you kind of mentioned the book scan numbers earlier, but Diary of a Wimpy Kid, Volume 5, mm-hmm. came out, and that is a series that does gangbusters everywhere else but the direct market. You know, I mean, that is, you see it at Target, you see it at Borders, and so when we see the final numbers, when we do our podcast in January, I think that's going to be high on the list.
remind me before we record to go look for that and stuff so I've got all those numbers handy.
For sure.
But that's the kind of thing. If it is something that is ubiquitous, in other words, you can find it at the Target, the Walmarts, wherever you turn around, they're going to have it at a better price than most comic stores are able to afford to offer it at.
Right.
Okay, so that's going to give them the advantage. And you're already going to have seen that, because let's face it, people are more likely to go hit one of those locations than they are to go hit the comic store. I mean, even those of us who are hardcore comic fans, I mean, granted I'm getting my stuff through DCBS, but back when I was getting it from a local store, usually I'd go to the store once a week.
Right.
You know, but I'm in either a grocery store or a Target or some other place that might have this kind of ubiquitous stuff a bit more often than that.
Well, that's the thing. This one ranks at 213 on the list, and it has an estimated sales of 542. I think it did a little bit better than that. You know what I mean?
Totally,
I mean, my God.
You know, and it's that again, that's one of those things where certain books are going to skew much lower on the mass or the direct market and much higher on the mass market.
Yeah, as Scott Pilgrim does.
But I think some of these others we've just been talking about, like that The Outsiders, the Dark Star, the Green Arrow, the Fantastic Four, a lot of those, some of them are not even going to make it into those bookstores. So they're going to skew much higher in the direct market, and particularly like a Dark Star. That the odds of that showing up in the mass market are really low.
Mm-hmm.
You know, much less doing any appreciable numbers. And I would be willing to bet if we were to get the mass market numbers and had Amazon broken out from everything else, the majority of the sales of those kinds of items would be at the Amazon, not at the brick and mortars. Just because it costs Amazon next to nothing to sell them.
Right.
They don't have to take the risk of, hey, I've got to go put this in how many of my stores across the globe. And that's the advantage of a digital store.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that ranked, or not ranked, low, it's about middle of the list, a little under, but did only 591 units this time around is Watchmen. It's close to cracking up to a quarter million. It's got 241,257 known unit sales, estimated sales, through the direct market over time. Now, again, that's had decades to do that, too.
Right.
But, again, that's where that the value in that column really kind of, you know, shoots all over the board, because just two or three items above or below, we've got, you know, around 600 or around 583 or whatever, you know, for the total sales of those respective items.
I was at the library the other day, or city library, and I was perused by the comic book and graphic novel section. Of course, they put it in the children's section, you know, or near the children, or the teen section, which is fine, you know. But they had no less than 5 copies of Watchmen, more than any other graphic novel there. You know, and that's telling, too. You know, it's right there in the teen section. Of course, the teens check it out. And but that's telling that it's doing that well in the library system.
Yeah,
that kids are checking it out. They have to have. I mean, that was 5 copies just on the shelf. They may have 10 and 5 checked out. You know.
Yeah.
So
now, one thing I wanted to touch on. You mentioned Scott Pilgrim there for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Oni Press had 7 items on the list. 6 of them were volumes 1 through 6 of Scott Pilgrim. That totaled up to 4,609 units. Now, the other 1,084 units were the Scott Pilgrim box set, which, of course, contains volumes 1 through 6. Now, this puts the total sales, depending how you count it, really the way it shows up on this list, at 5,693 units. But really, that 1,084 is not arguably one sale, although technically it is. It's really 6 sales. So when you do a box set like this, it kind of skews the numbers as to how well did something sell. Because arguably, that 1,000 gets added to the 1,508 for the first volume, the 795 for the second volume, the 622 for the third volume, and the 591 for volume 4, the 552 for volume 5, and the 541 for volume 6 and stuff. That's one of those things where, you know, how the numbers look on one thing, and then if you dig just a little bit deeper, it's like, oh wait, that's a box set, that's 6 volumes, how many books did Oni really move this month?
Right.
I just find that kind of thing a little interesting. Now, the other thing I found kind of telling this time around is if we look at the price points, we only have four price points that have over 20 items to them, and those are $14.99, which had 52 items, $17.99, which had 21 items, $19.99, which had 48 items, and $24.99, which had 25 items. So those are the most popular price points, and that accounts for almost half the list, counts for 146 of the items. And then everything else is really kind of sprinkled around the price points this time, with $99.99 being the most expensive item. And what was that? That was...
All-Star Superman?
I believe it was. Yes, Absolute All-Star Superman.
There was a $75 one, too. What was that?
There were two of those. Well, there was the $75
and
the...
And $74.
$74.99. The $75...
Oh, the Rocketeer. Okay.
Well, the Rocketeer and the Green Lantern Omnibus.
Okay.
And then the $74.99 was that Squadron Supreme by Grunewald.
Okay. And then the box set.
At the $72, yeah.
Right.
So really not a whole lot of high-ticket items. I think we've seen a major shying away from that over the last year or two. Because, again, it used to be that we would have almost an omnibus a month, it seemed like, or an absolute or something. But I think it was smart for them to kind of scale back on that.
I don't think there's an absolute on the schedule right now.
Doesn't surprise me. I mean, can you think of something that's really crying out saying this needs to be an absolute?
No, but I know that DC is doing, they kind of just announced it through Amazon. They're revving up their omnibus line, like this Green Lantern one. They're going to have a Jack Kirby one, another Jack Kirby, another Steve Ditko. Teen Titans omnibus is going to be coming out.
Now, what's all going to be in that one?
The Teen Titans?
Yeah.
It's going to be the Wolfman Perez 1 through 16. Ah. So basically, it's the first two archives are getting reprinted into an omnibus.
Interesting. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then the Ditko is going to be Shade the Changing Man and Stalker. And Kirby is going to be his work on Green Arrow.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that'll be kind of fun.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of those, it's either stuff that's older than I really care about or I've got the component issues.
Yeah. I'll get the Ditko stuff. I'm a big fan of Steve Ditko's, you know.
Yeah, yeah. He's done some great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he also did Speedball.
Yeah, so. He did. Yeah.
But he did it well.
Yeah. And he's still alive and kicking.
Yeah, yeah. So anything else you want to talk about on this? I don't really think I've got much else.
You don't want to mention the Smurfs?
Oh, yeah. I was going through the list. I noticed at rank 86, we had Smurfs Volume 3. It was a $5.99 book. It was 1,174 units. But really what got me about Volume 3 of the Smurfs was the title, Smurf King. And I'm thinking, okay, so anything below 1,174 units this month around was Smurf King bad sales. Either we get laughs from the audience or we don't. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So any listener who thought that was a brilliant pun, let me know. Anyone who doesn't, oh well. But, I mean, really, I've got to say, if you're getting under 1,200 units on some of the stuff, that is pretty Smurf King bad.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, even Punisher Frankencastle did better than that.
Well, that was a great story.
Up until the end.
I liked it. I really enjoyed it. I went on a rant on my last podcast, John, about how I'm very upset that Remender is still on the title, but they gave him a new number one, and it's a miniseries in the Blood.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, after that, we're going to have a new number one Punisher. I mean, all these number ones, when we don't need all these new number ones. And he is the redheaded, you know, child for this sort of thing.
Because he's not one of the architects over at Marvel, is he?
Oh yeah, don't get me started with that. No, you know what? No, real quick. Rank 238, Tarzan, Jesse Marsh, Volume 7, 493 units. And then below that, at 249 from IDW, we've got Bloom County Complete Library, Volume 3, with 479 estimated units. What's interesting is I see one of these in mass market bookstores and the other one in comic book stores. You know, I mean, Bloom County, that number is very low. I'm sure they did much better numbers for these books.
This is also reorder activity for the Bloom County.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, it is reorder activity. Okay, I'm sorry. Then I'm okay. Well, then I have no leg to stand on then, I guess.
Sorry.
But, you know, but that's a book that's going to, either way, that's a book that's going to do better in the mass market.
Oh, totally, totally. Yeah. That's one that they could put on the mass market and just let it sit, because over time it will sell.
And then what do you think of a series like Tarzan? There's enough material there. They could do 35 volumes.
There was a point at which I would have said, yeah, there's a market for that. But frankly, I would have had to say that like 20 or 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I really think in this day and age where the world feels so small that the very concept of Tarzan's a bit harder of a sell.
Right.
It's one of those kind of iconic characters that just doesn't age as well.
Mm-hmm. 500 units, that's it. I mean, that's rough.
$50 book, though. It's a hardcover. It's really for a niche audience.
Oh,
and
more so
than the rest of this stuff.
Right.
So.
But you just wonder, where is the point where the guys at Dark Horse says, enough?
I think it really comes down to how passionate the editor is of keeping that going.
Yeah.
And really, I think that there are some things out there that exist only because the person who was able to make the decision said, I want this.
Mm-hmm.
And there is nothing wrong with that. I think some of what we've got right now over at DC, I believe, comes from pretty much a direct result of Paul Levitz having been a big fan of the Spirit.
Yeah.
That's how they signed the agreement one year in San Diego to be doing all those archives. It's how they got all those archives. That's how they were able to do the Spirit series for a while. I think that led directly into what we've got now as First Wave.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, was there really a business case? Was there a mandate for DC to do those archives? Well, frankly, if DC didn't, somebody else probably would have.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Those archives are beautiful, too.
And again, it's Eisner.
Yeah.
You know, he's...
Can't go wrong.
Yeah. He's one of those that I think every reader out there needs to read more of. And I certainly include myself in that.
Yeah.
I do not have those archives. The books I have of Eisner's are his How to Write Comics books.
Mm-hmm.
Graphics and Sequential Art, the one on Anatomy, and I forget what the other one is. And he was really a master at the craft.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I really haven't read that much Spirit stuff that he's done.
Mm, it's really, really good.
Yeah, but there's only so many hours in my day.
I read them all in 1 year. That was my goal in 2009. I read all 27 archives.
Wow.
1 year.
That's cool.
Yeah, it was really cool. Think about that. That's one every 2 weeks.
I wish
about a comic a night, you know, or a story a night.
I wish I had the time to fit in that many trades and stuff. Mm-hmm. I've got, sitting on the table behind me here, probably 50 trades and hardcovers and stuff in the I'd like to read these sooner rather than later category.
Yeah, I was going to put that question or a similar question up on my Facebook fan page of what do you own in trade paperback or hardcover or whatever that has been sitting around and you've been neglecting? What's and that you want to read? You know, like the most neglected thing you have not read.
Well, I'm at the point here with my office, home office I've got, where I want to rearrange some stuff simply so I've got room to put in some more bookcases.
Mm-hmm.
There's one or two other things motivating it, but that's one of the things. And I've got this one stretch of wall space right now that's about 115 inches, and I'm debating, do I want a 2-shelf bookcase or a 3-shelf bookcase? The problem is this is the wall kind of right by the staircase. It's got a ledge. The 3-shelf would be a little too high. Do I want to do that? You know, but it's like, you know, I could probably put a 5-shelf bookcase there and fill it pretty damn quick for the whole thing. You know, four of them, but still. It's just a matter of I've got too many books. But if I can get them on the shelf where I can actually see them, that gives me a little more impetus to say, oh, I really ought to go read that. But I've been, part of why I've got all these up on the table here is so I can kind of make a list as to what Bob and I might do if we get the back issue spotlight going again.
Mm-hmm.
But part of that for me is just finding the time to be reading those trades over and above all the comics I read every week.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I'll get 30, 40, 50 or so books a week, and that takes a little while to plow through. And I say plow through. I enjoy reading this stuff. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, to then say, okay, let's read another, you know, 6-issue trade paperback or 12-issue hardcover. It's just a little hard to find the time.
Mm-hmm. It is.
So what do you got coming up on your show?
On my show, well, I've got my episode 300 coming up.
Cool. Congratulations 5th. On that.
Thank you very much. But on December 29th, I'll have my year in review show. That'll always be fun.
Yeah.
And it's my not a typical show. It's basically one big list, you know, and I always tell people to don't listen to it all the way through. Use it. You can listen through it throughout the year. I can break it up into I actually put a timestamp on that episode, and so you can, I break it down into the top 10 and then what came out each month. And I timestamp each month. And
that's very much appreciated when you do that, because you go through a lot of material there.
It's one of my longer. It's always an hour. I try to keep it under an hour. But it's something that not only notable things, but things that I picked up there that I enjoyed, and maybe some unorthodox stuff that you may have missed. So it's a good little retrospective.
Cool.
Yeah. What about you?
Well, actually, this is a fairly big week, I think, for the Comic Book Page podcast. This, of course, is going up on Wednesday. This past Monday, which will be the next weekly comic spotlight I record, but the one that will have gone up just before this, we're going to talk about Secret Six number 28, Heroes for Hire number 1, Marine Man number 1. But what the big deal about that issue is, while it's weekly comic spotlight 173, it is the 450th episode of the podcast.
All right.
So we've been doing this for a while. And then, of course, we've got this episode. Friday will be the comics episode, provided, of course, I record that on Saturday with Bob, as we plan to. With these two episodes, I complete 5 years of having podcasted about comic book sales and trade paperback sales.
That's incredible.
Now, again, a couple of years prior to that, I was tracking all this stuff on my website, doing stuff there. But to actually have gone on a monthly basis to be talking about this stuff, I was surprised when I realized, wow, it's been 5 years.
I'm glad I'm along for the ride, man. This has been great.
I've really enjoyed it. I thank, you know, everybody who's contributed over time, listeners and stuff, who've had some good questions, all of that stuff. Obviously, Bob's been a huge component of that over on the comic side and whatnot. And again, you know, another month, we'll come back not only for the trade episode, I'll do the comics one with Bob, but all three of us will get together for the year in review. And once I get those numbers crunched, we can talk about how 2010 was as a year. And then we figured out what we're going to do for next week's weekly comic spotlight. That's going to be Fables 100, which is going to be damn near 100 pages. It's going to be a long one to read. New Avengers 7, there's a story behind that, and Starborn number 1, which is part of the Stan Lee stuff over at Boom. Now, the reason we're picking New Avengers number 7 next week is it came down to two Marvel books. Part of it was a little bit of a small week for Marvel. The other part was Bob's been cutting back on $3.99 books. So once we whittled all that down, it was either that or a book we'd already covered recently. I forget what it was, but... I can't fault Bob for kind of fighting back on that $3.99 cover price on the monthly side.
How did you like? Give me a little preview of Heroes for Hire.
I wish I could. It is we're recording this on a Thursday night. I'm going to review that on a Saturday night.
Okay, you haven't read it yet?
Before I read that, I've got to read the Daredevil and Shadowland issues, because Heroes for Hire spins out of all of that.
Right.
So I wonder if there's a proper order between those two. I'll probably find out.
Well, I was not going to get Heroes for Hire, but I think I might. It's on issue 3 right now. It just came out. And was it 3 or did 1 just
this
come out?
This is the first issue of Heroes for Hire that just came out.
It just came out. Oh, yeah. Okay. I'm thinking of another book. I'm sorry. Yeah, okay. I got the sneak peek comic in with my DCBS order. And I think because of that just little 2-page spread, I'm going to pick it up. It looks like it's going to be pretty good.
Abnett and Lanning, I got high hopes.
Yeah.
Those guys are good writers. Yeah, I make a point of waiting until as close to when we record as possible to read the items for the week for the review, because my memory is really bad. There have been a couple of times I'll read it on the Monday or whatever. Certainly I'll remember by Saturday. And I'm like, I read this book. I do not remember this book. This is also why I take notes and have a crib sheet when I do the episodes.
You have to. Absolutely.
I'm getting old. The hair's gone gray. The brain cells have burnt out.
Oh, I mean, I still read from a script in my podcast. I mean, you have to. You got to have notes.
Well, the other thing is Bob and I record this bright and early Saturday morning. He's an early riser, which is good because he's rising earlier because he's on the West Coast.
Right.
I don't not wake up that well. But, you know, we had some good stuff. It's, like I said, a big week for the Comic Per Page podcast. Hitting 450 episodes. I'm surprised we've gotten that many out.
Right.
The 173 weekly, episodes just for the reviews and stuff. 5 years of doing the number crunching and stuff on, the comics and trades. I think that's a pretty big accomplishment right there. And then, factor in the 38 episodes of the previews, spotlight, and all that stuff. We've done quite a bit. So I'm happy with that. I'm just tired is what it comes down to. A lot to do. So that's what we've got. And I'm taking a little time off for the holidays. If I can get current on my reading going into the holidays, which I should be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can do that, I'm going to try to coordinate with Bob and see if we can get plan for the back issue spotlight and stuff. Maybe record a couple of those during the holidays and space those out during the year. I don't know. It just comes down to how much time we've got and how much reading we feel like doing.
That's exactly right. Because like right now for me, I really don't have to do a review for anything until January 19th, which is because there's so many planned out things on my schedule that for the show.
Yeah.
That I can just kind of breeze through it. My end of the year, I got an interview coming up, adopt a character for the new year kind of thing. And so next week I'm taking off. So it's pretty easy time of year for me right now. And plus, I don't want to do a whole lot of work because, the family's in town and the kids are out of school. So I don't have time to sit around and produce shows. But
This gets to be a busy time of year for me because particularly when we hit about this time next month, I'll have the December numbers for the comics and the trades. I'll have to do the year-end numbers.
Right. We got to do that too, right?
My mom, my dad, and my sister, who all live here in town, all have birthdays within the first 2 weeks of the new year.
Oh, jeez.
We'll be doing a preview spotlight somewhere in there, and then, like I said, we're going to see if we can get some of these back issue spotlights going. And part of it for me is I'm the whole reason we haven't done those for a while. It's hard for me to find the time to record, to do the reading, to record them, to edit them. I mean, they take a lot of work.
Right.
They can be a lot of fun, but, I mean, they're really time-consuming.
Maybe I'll do one with you.
That'd be fun. I mean, if you have an idea for one, if any of our listeners have an idea, by all means, shoot us an email, let us know. I mean, what would you like to do one on?
Oh, off the top of my head, I'm not sure. But, we'll see.
Think about it.
Something. Yeah.
Think about it. So, anything else? Does that pretty much wrap it up?
I think that'll do it.
Cool. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themailreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening. The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If they differ from your reality, please verify you're in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. If you're a resident of some other space-time continuum, please limit any actions you may take to that alternate reality. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. Diamond Order Index only goes to 2 decimal places, and therefore there's a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. For months in which no issue of Batman or Detective shipped, Batman: The Battle for the Cowl was used instead. The title used as the key title is irrelevant. If you do not understand why or do not believe this, please consider taking a refresher course on basic algebra. Math is fun, but only if you understand it. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Sell-through information is not currently available, and we limit our reporting to the available information. If, however, you enjoy fiction, please listen to this preview spotlight for our recommendations of upcoming comic books. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications that at least one retailer may have excessive amounts of empty shelf space with dust that needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold to Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month in question. The list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to the retailers for the month in question. More than 300 graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions for the month.
In the past, the list of top graphic novels and collected editions contained only 100, 50, 25, or as few as 10 items on the list. This means that historical data about graphic novels and collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which, as far as we know, has not been invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales of any comic book, graphic novel, or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 300 graphic novels and collected edition lists are included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. For some strange reason, Diamond doesn't report on sales to competing distributors. No information about the sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside of Diamond's comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. We limit this report to the available data. If more data becomes available, we'd be happy to include it. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for. No amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer's here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is inapplicable in the alternate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Math, logic, and the English language itself seem to work very differently there. I have neither the time nor the interest in engaging in pointless debates in this hypothetical reality. There are no guarantees of accuracy, reliability, completeness, or timeliness of any of the information given in the course of this discussion. We are human, and sometimes we make mistakes. We appreciate your understanding in this area. Any statements that may contain projections or other predictions about future events should be viewed as opinions that are subject to change as new information becomes available. Actual events may unfold in unexpected ways. As Doc Brown once said, the future is what you make of it. If any statements are contradicted or contested, the participants of the discussion may disavow any knowledge of those statements.